Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today we will continue listening to Tangent's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146 Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello once again. I hope you've had a great week, and I'm glad you could join the program. For those of you who have not followed us so far, we're going through the text A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life by the ancient Indian Buddhist master Shantideva. We've reached the 8th chapter, the chapter on meditation, where Shantideva teaches his unique way to develop a wholehearted understanding and empathy for others. In a mental experiment, he envisages exchanging places and interacting emotionally with a person lower than himself, a person equal to himself, and a person higher than himself, in social standing, education, wealth, and so on. He tries to really feel what both himself as these people and the egotistical himself, seen as other, go through in the interaction. Pema Chodron, the Buddhist nun who commented on Shantideva's text in her book No Time to Lose, puts it like this. She says Shantideva asks us to exchange places with others, lower, higher and equal, and without another thought, experience their afflictive emotions. He encourages us to intensify these emotions and experience their energy directly, using them as our vehicle for awakening insight and compassion. We begin by identifying with someone we might consider lower, such as a homeless person. As a mind training practice, he asks us to imagine ourselves in this person's place. This serves two purposes. First, you intentionally experience an emotion we all normally avoid, the envy that someone with nothing could easily feel. Imagine a well-off person passing by and condescendingly handing you down a few coins. See this fortunate person, clean and well-clothed, maybe chatting with friends and going into a restaurant or a movie, and don't hold back. Get in touch with your envy. Exaggerate it with your thoughts and allow it to escalate, just as Shantideva does. Feel its intensity, seductiveness, obsessiveness, and pain. That's the first purpose of this practice. The second purpose is to experience being on the receiving end of such an intense emotion. And this is a radical thing to do. Normally, we see things exclusively from our own perspectives. Reflecting on the other person's experience is a far more expansive and compassionate stance and a straightforward, practical way to awaken bodhicitta. Bodhicitta, of course, is the mind that wishes to attain enlightenment to be of the greatest benefit possible to all living beings. As Pema Chodron implies, although Shantideva puts himself in the role-playing position, he's really teaching and encouraging us to conduct his experiment on ourselves to deepen our experience. To generate envy, jealousy, and pride, he goes on with verses like, "He is honored, but I am not. I have not found wealth such as he. He is praised, but I am despised. He is happy, but I suffer. I have to do all the work, while he remains comfortably at rest. He is renowned as great in this world, but I as inferior, with no good qualities at all." Here, he's in the position of the lower person, looking up at himself as the higher person, and thus generating jealousy and envy. But then later, he realizes that the poorer person also has some good qualities, as all people do, and is not as unfortunate as others on this planet. Just like the well-off person is not as fortunate as others higher than himself. As His Holiness the Dalai Lama points out, superior and inferior are only relative judgments, and you cannot have the one without the other. And one person is not as fortunate as another, not because of any inherent bad qualities, but because of the results of afflictive emotions and karma. And so Kunzang Peldon, in his commentary, The Nectar of Manjushri's Speech, writes, by appreciating the suffering involved in being a poor and insignificant person without talents or honor, you come to realize how wrong it is to be arrogant and scornful. It dawns on you how unpleasant it is for people in humble position when you are proud and supercilious towards them. You should stop behaving like this and begin to treat people with respect, providing them with sustenance and clothing and working to help them in practical ways. Then Shantideva tells us to play the role of someone with similar qualities to ourselves, seeing our current egotistical self as a backstabbing competitor. By all means, I shall make clear to the entire world all the good qualities I have, but I shall not let anyone hear of any good qualities he may have. Also, I shall hide all my faults. I will be venerated, but not he. I will find a great deal of material gain. I will be honored, but he shall not. Again, Kunzang Peldon says, by using the spirit of rivalry in this way as an antidote to jealousy, you will come to recognize your own faults in being competitive with others. Then you will stop behaving like this and instead do whatever you can to help your rivals with presents and honors. And then finally, we are to play the superior, looking down on an inferior. It is said that this deluded one is trying to compete with me. But how can he be equal with me in learning, intelligence, form, class, or wealth? Even though he has some possessions, if he's working for me, I shall give him just enough to live on, and by force I'll take the rest. His happiness and comfort will decline, and I shall always cause him harm. For hundreds of times in this cycle of rebirth, he has caused harm to me. Now, by playing the sneering superior and seeing the harm we cause through self-opinionated arrogance, we come to understand those who behave arrogantly towards us and so abandon such attitudes and behavior in ourselves. Instead, we develop respect. When we look at the egotistical eye in this way, true disgust will well up in our hearts, says His Holiness. And as we identify ourselves with these other beings in all their misery, we will feel closer to them, and the wish to help them will grow. Now, I know we covered all this in the last program, but what Shantideva is doing is not altogether easy to understand at first. So we've gone through a bit of a refresher today. But now, before we go on with the following verses, let's set our motivation as usual, thinking, if you can, that this program may become the cause for the enlightenment not only of ourselves, but of all beings caught in the coils of samsara everywhere. However, if at this time you can only focus on your own freedom from all suffering and dissatisfaction, that motivation is also good. Thank you. Once Shantideva has played this mind experiment with himself, he realizes that no matter what situation he has been in, inferior, equal, or superior to others, he has always reacted with self-interest. That is, jealousy and envy as an inferior, competitiveness and rivalry with equals, and arrogance and pride as a superior. And what has he achieved with this? He says, because of desiring to benefit yourself, O mind, all the weariness you've gone through over countless past eons has only succeeded in achieving misery. As His Holiness the Dalai Lama writes in A Flash of Lightning in the Dark of Night, let us remind ourselves of the negative actions the I has made us do, all the harm it has done us, making us suffer and causing endless suffering for others too. This is our real enemy. Would it not be wonderful to make it suffer more than we do, or even make it disappear altogether? Should we not be genuinely proud if we could break it and render it powerless? I've talked before about a quite beautiful but fat tortoiseshell cat that lives with us at the temple. I was thinking about the usefulness of her life a little while ago and realized how almost entirely self-focused she is. She often whines for attention, friendly when wanting a stroke or to indulge in her favorite activity, eating. However, if we pet her a little too much or a too little, she's likely to suddenly unleash her fury and claws on us. When she doesn't want anything, or knows she wouldn't get it, she's really quite a madam, quite indifferent, if not disdainful. She uses our rock garden as a toilet, maybe for spite, because I think she knows full well that I don't like it. And as for exercise, she does what she can to kill rats and baby rabbits, purely for enjoyment, for she never eats them, but just leaves the bodies usually headless, lying forlornly in the garden. I was struck by how much of a nuisance her life is to others. It accomplishes nothing worthwhile. It doesn't do much to satisfy her incessant desires, and is either a bind or a threat to others. The likelihood of happiness for her in the future therefore cannot be great, and it's quite obvious that the self-cherishing I, inconsiderate of all others' well-being, is to blame. I sometimes think she must have been a very haughty duchess or something like that in a previous life, for she's quite the Dowager Countess of Grantham now, but without the wit or any wisdom. Now she's just a fat, well-looked-after, but generally unhappy moggy, creating causes to be even more unhappy in the times to come. Of course, I hope that my connection with her will eventually lead to the destruction of her self-grasping and self-cherishing, but that may take a very long time, for there's no doubt that I have my own shortcomings to work through first, and some of those I probably am refusing to acknowledge even now. But anyway, taking the cat as a kind of example, when we see the misery that the self-benefiting mind creates, we might be inspired to say, as Shantideva does, "Therefore, I shall definitely engage myself in working for the benefit of others. For since the words of the Mighty One are infallible, I shall behold its advantages in the future." The Buddha was quite clear that using one's life to benefit others is the way to good fortune and happiness in the future, even if it doesn't seem to result in much in the present life. Shantideva says this must be true, as the Buddha doesn't lie. If in the past I had practiced this act of exchanging self for others, a situation such as this, devoid of the magnificence and bliss of a Buddha, could not possibly have come about. Therefore, just as I have come to hold as I these drops of sperm and blood of others, likewise, through acquaintance, I should also come to regard all others. Having thoroughly examined myself to see whether I am really working for others or not, I shall steal whatever appears in my body and use it for the benefit of others. We're not Buddhas, well, most of us are not, and we could ask why. Here, basically, Shantideva is saying that in all our previous histories, we based our actions on self-cherishing. We never thought of exchanging our narrow, selfish attitudes for the wish to be of greatest benefit to others. How many of us have practiced or even heard of the practices that we described earlier in the program? The practices of exchanging ourselves with a lower, an equal, and a superior person. Of course, there is that cliché exhortation in English, put yourself in the other person's shoes. But we often do it from a very self-referential point of view. That is, how would I feel in that person's shoes? We don't experience what the other person is going through, but what we imagine we would go through in their place. Really practicing changing ourselves for others requires quite a lot of wisdom, I think, and if we had developed that in our previous lives, we might now be Buddhas and not in our current miserable situation. In his commentary, Kunzang Peldon writes, "Continuing to address his own mind, Shantideva observes that if in earlier existences it had undertaken such practice, performing the exchange of self and other, it would now be experiencing a state of bliss, like the Buddhas Shakyamuni or Amitabha, who are the objects of offering of the three worlds. He would possess a body adorned with the major and minor marks of Buddhahood. He would have speech and as melodious as Brahma and an omniscient mind, together with every perfection. He would no longer be in samsara, as he is in the present, controlled by a negative emotion, tormented by suffering in the present moment, and with no surety that he will escape from falling into the lower realms in his next life. It is thus Shantideva instructs us about the resulting profit or danger of having either an altruistic or egotistic attitude." And so once again, Shanti Davis says, from now on, as he's developed a self-identity based on foreign substances, that's the sperm of his father and the blood of his mother, in the future, he will so identify with others that he will develop a self-identity based on the foreign substances that make up their bodies. Instead of seeing others as different from himself, he will accept them as himself, no less than he accepts his own body as his own. And in the verse, having thoroughly examined myself to see whether I am really working for others or not, I shall steal whatever appears in my body and use it for the benefit of others. Kunzen Peldon makes an interesting analogy. In the translation he uses, the words spy on myself are used instead of thoroughly examine myself. I think that connotation must be in the Tibetan, for Kunzen Peldon writes, the omniscient Longchampa illustrated the use of the word spy in this verse by saying, when you are cutting felt, a dog will not spy on you. Oh, and just by the way, Longchampa was a great Buddhist master of the Tibetan Nyingma tradition and is considered the greatest author on that tradition's Dzogchen teachings. Kunzang Peldon continues, Shantideva considers that when in the past he had looked upon the belongings, that's food, clothing, and goods of other people, he tried various ploys in the hope of manipulating them into giving him what they had, just like a dog watching people eating meat in the hope of getting some. But from now on, he says, he will instead spy on his own belongings as though through other people's eyes. And to help others, he will despoil himself of all that he has, giving away to those who have nothing. He reflects that in the past, he used to be envious of others. From now on, he will be envious of himself. This very much ties in with a basic Buddhist instruction to see everything you have as only lent to you. You own nothing. As soon as we own something, our mind latches onto it and wraps it around with tendrils of attachment. Then, if anything untoward happens to it, we get very upset. However, if we see it as only on loan, when we have to say goodbye to it for one reason or another, we'll be much less distraught. Even our relationships are only lent to us, for sooner or later we have to give them up. And Pema Chodron has yet another take on this verse. She says, so much of what we do builds up selfishness and destroys our happiness. Exchanging self for others brings contentment into our lives. It's as simple as that. Herbert Gunther, she says, defines ego as a fictitious self. Here, this fictitious self is being advised by wisdom mind to free itself and benefit others by whatever means possible. If your neurotic tendency is to steal, turn stealing into benefit for others. Well, does this mean we should all become Robin Hoods, do you think? In order to be free of covetousness, imagining stealing whatever your fictitious self is most attached to, and then giving that to those in need. This is a unique instruction for escaping the trap of self-centered grasping, she writes. Herbert Gunther, by the way, was Emeritus Professor of Far Eastern Studies at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. He was also a Buddhist philosopher who had studied with many Tibetan Buddhist masters and was fluent in Pali, Sinhalese, Sanskrit, Tibetan, Chinese, Japanese, English, German, Russian, and Hindi. He also studied Hebrew, Greek, Latin, Arabic, Spanish, and Italian, just for the fun of it. And he played the flute. If you are interested, many of his books are still available, though he is notorious for being hard to read. But getting back to Shantideva, the next verses go like this. I am happy, but others are sad. I am high, though others are low. I benefit myself, but not others. Why am I not envious of myself? I must separate myself from happiness and take upon myself the sufferings of others. Why am I doing this now? In this way, I should examine myself for faults. As a disciple of the compassionate Buddha, Shantideva wears the red and yellow robes as a mark of the Buddha's blessing, writes Kunzang Peldon. And he follows in the Buddha's footsteps and correctly trains himself. Therefore, he's a refuge for beings, the object of their homage and respect. It does not harm them at all, but only brings them benefit. Therefore, he is indeed perfectly happy in this and future lives, while others suffer now and in the hereafter through their bad behavior. He is in an eminent position, since others pay him homage and are respectful, whereas others are in a lowly position and are subject at all times to the payment of taxes and other dues. At all times he has lots of friends to look after him, whereas other people have no one to care for them and are harmed by many. This is not right, Shantideva reflects. He ought to be jealous of himself. Now, part of the training of an ordinary ordained person is not to see oneself as an object of respect, but as a voice for the Dharma and a mere representative of the enlightened Sangha. So when people make offerings and pay homage, I try to see myself merely as a symbol for those that really deserve the respect, the Arhats, Bodhisattvas and the Buddhas. In this way, I can use my body as a vessel for the people to create positive potential for themselves, while I make sure not to get above myself. Even when he teaches, His Holiness the Dalai Lama reminds himself to stay grounded. If you've ever been to one of his teachings, you might have noticed that before he gets up onto the throne, after he's prostrated, he clicks his fingers. This is to remind himself that everything is impermanent, so there's no reason for pride. Actually, he also recites the short verse from the Diamond Cutter Sutra that goes, "Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning and clouds, look at all conditioned phenomena as such." It's easy to see that the respect that people pay me is not really for me, because if I decided to disrobe, as soon as I stopped being a monk, people would no longer bow down to me. However, even so, lay people, especially in the Theravadan traditions, do tend to look after monks very well and pay much respect, and so it's easy for a monk's mind to get caught up in seeing himself as something special. So special that even the poorest families will give him food and requisites. So now, Shantideva turns the situation around, understanding that others are many and suffering, and he's only one, and in the following verses, vows to only serve others and take on their sufferings. As Kunzen Peldon writes, "In the past, Shantideva injured others while trying to secure satisfaction for himself. But henceforth, his happiness and the enjoyment of possessions, all this he will give away. Whatever he had in terms of food and clothing, he will give away to those who have nothing, in a bid to make them happy. In return, he will embrace their sorrows. He will take on himself the poverty that they are now suffering. In the past, he says, he constantly found fault with others. Now, having understood the way of the Bodhisattvas, he will not use his knowledge as a searchlight to inspect the shortcomings of others. Instead, he will use it as a mirror with which to examine his own faults. Questioning all his actions of thought, word, and deed, he will repeatedly examine them and repudiate his own shortcomings." And this is really good advice even for us who are not as far along the path as Shantideva, and harks back to the chapter on mindfulness and alertness. It's so easy, if we're not alert to the mind in the present moment, to blame, criticize, or to put ourselves, even subtly, above others. We lose understanding of their situation, the recognition of their suffering. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, "When you plant lettuce, if it does not grow well, you don't blame the lettuce. You look for the reasons it's not doing well. It may need fertilizer, or more water, or less sun. You never blame the lettuce. Yet, if we have problems with our friends or family, we blame the other person. But if we know how to take care of them, they will grow well, like the lettuce. Blaming has no positive effect at all, nor does trying to persuade using reason and argument. That is my experience. No blame, no reasoning, no argument, just understanding. If you understand and you show that you understand, you can love and the situation will change." Shantideva takes it even further in the next verse. "Although others may do something wrong," he writes, "I should transform it into a fault of my own. But should I do something even slightly wrong, I shall openly admit it to many people. Now, we tend to do the opposite, don't we? When someone else does something wrong, we're quick to point out their fault. But when we do the same thing, we try to hide it, make excuses or blame others. Shantideva turns this on its head, as Pema Chodron says, directing all blame towards the cause of our misery, our neurotic self-absorption. Rather than blaming others for our unhappiness or blaming ourselves in a harsh, mean-spirited way, we take a clear, compassionate look at how self-centeredness ruins our chances of lasting happiness. Our relentless self-importance causes us to suffer far more than any culprit, she says. And do you remember the story of Geshe Ben, who was being offered lunch at a lay family's house? For a time before the meal, he was left alone in the dining room where there was a packet of tea. He'd run out of tea in his hermitage, so thought he would take a little from the packet. But when his hand was in the packet and he realized what he was doing, he yelled out, "Come quickly, there's a thief in the house." And if I try to find an example of the bodhisattva action of taking on the fault of another, Sidney Carton from A Tale of Two Cities comes to mind. If you haven't read the Charles Dickens novel, you might not realize that the famous quote, "It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done," comes from it, when Carton willingly goes to the guillotine in the place of his lookalike Charles Darnay. Of course, in Dickens' eyes, neither Darnay nor Carton are at fault as such, but Carton's action is much in the spirit of Shantideva's verse. Shantideva now goes on, "By further describing the renown of others, I should make it outshine my own. Just like the lowest kind of servant, I should employ myself for the benefit of all. I should not praise my naturally fault-ridden self for some temporary good quality it may have. I shall never let even a few people know of any good qualities I may possess. In brief, for the sake of living creatures, may all the harms I've selfishly caused to others descend upon me myself." Pema Chodron cautions here against taking these verses as masochism. We need to be very clear that Shantideva is not advising us to denigrate ourselves, she writes. He's encouraging us to acknowledge this misery caused by our ego trips and to use our innate wisdom to turn that around. Instead of generating self-loathing, this practice promotes confidence in our basic goodness. When driving all blame onto ego, it's important to keep this in mind. Shantideva wants his ego to experience all the harm it selfishly caused others, and this would certainly be a surefire method for curing our self-centered, aggressive tendencies. And Kunzen Peldon writes, "This baneful ego is by nature full of faults. Whatever rare talents it has, successful activities, learning, intelligence, meditative practice and retreat, are purely accidental. We should keep quiet about them, almost as if they were stolen goods, so that no one knows about them. We should never make use of them as a means to improve our situation. As the Buddha advised his disciples, do not advertise your good qualities, do not conceal your faults. In short, we should make the wish that all the damage we have done from time without beginning in trying to get advantage for ourselves, in the way of fame, possessions, and so on at others' cost, through theft and so forth, should descend entirely upon us. May we be injured, and may others benefit. In brief, as it's been said, we must purify our karmic debts and repay what we owe." And with that, we're out of time. Please dedicate any positive potential from the program to the enlightenment of all beings. Thanks for being with us today, and if you're back next week, see you then. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.